Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, Nesters, it's Elizabeth here. And today on Best to the Nest, we're going to repost another past episode. By now, I think most of you have heard about the passing of Ian Punnett, Marjorie's beloved husband. And we want to make sure that we give Marjorie enough time to be able to have the conversation that she wants to have about this loss in her life. And so we've decided to take one more week off and look back at one more episode where we talked about their marriage and their relationship. And last week we reposted an episode from June called The Long Game Part 1. And today we are reposting The Long Game Part 2. Ian and Marjorie celebrated 38 years of marriage in June. And we were lucky enough to have a wonderful conversation about that and about some of the lessons that they've learned over time. And we were inspired by an article listing some secrets to success for long relationships. And we even got some wonderful feedback from you all, our wonderful nesters. So we've decided to repost that episode today. We want to say, of course, a thank you to our sponsor of Best to the Nest, which is Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. We love Climate Smart Skincare so much. It is affordable luxury skincare from France. It's proven for anti-aging results. And boy, as you feel that cold starting to come in Minnesota, you want to make sure that your skincare is really in tip-top shape. I feel like particularly this time of year. So you can use that code BEST for an extra 20% off with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to pourmoiskincare.com. That's P-O-U-R-M-O-I skincare.com. And now let's take a listen back to that episode, The Long Game Part 2.
I'm Marjorie Punnett.
I'm Elizabeth Reese.
This is Best of the Nest, the podcast that's all about creating strong, comfortable, beautiful nests that prepare us to fly. And we are flying. It was so much fun this week. I actually felt like I was in conversation. So give everybody a little bit of the backstory of what's going on.
It is so good to really get to highlight and have connection with this amazing community. And you know who you are because you pull me aside in the grocery store and you're like, I'm a nester. I'm a nester. Yes. And then I know the kind of person you are and I feel immediately connected to you. So if you missed last week's podcast, I encourage you to just hit pause right now on this one so you can go back and listen to last week. We were talking about the concept of the long game when it comes to marriage. Ian and Marjorie just celebrated a big anniversary. How many was it? 38, did we say?
38 years.
My parents just celebrated 43 years.
Gosh, I didn't know we were so close behind them.
I know. I don't know how the math works out on that. So. Yeah, you did. We were discussing what are some of the things that make a marriage last? Because if you've ever listened to this podcast, you know that we are both very transparent in conversation that neither of us finds marriage to be super easy. I think if you're really independent, it can feel challenging. There's lots of challenges when it comes to marriage. Even for the best of couples, it is challenging to navigate. And so Marjorie had a really fun little list of some things that can help you making sure that the longevity of your marriage is there. And then what happened
Real quickly, so the woman who did the article, her name is Colleen Sullivan. I want to give her credit. What was cool is she interviewed people who had been married more than 25 years.
Yeah.
So the advice wasn't from therapists. It was from people who had successfully stayed married for 25 years. That link is on part one. So go back.
That's on part one.
Please continue.
So then, of course, we only got to like one of the things on the list because then we just yammered on. As we do.
There are 13 things, Elizabeth. 13.
And we got through one.
One. Yeah.
Whoa. That was probably feedback when we had a radio show. Hey, ladies, you might need to like get through the content that you've planned. But now that it's our own podcast, we can do whatever the hizzle we want. So
that's right.
So then we asked for your feedback. And I said, hey, listen, we're going to check our DMs. We're going to check messages on the Best to the Nest Facebook page. We want to know what's been the secret to your success when it comes to the longevity of your marriage. Marjorie's been married for 38 years. I'm coming up on 10 years, which in marriage land is still pretty long, I think.
That's a milestone. And actually, I didn't say this in the last podcast, but I always add 15 years to my marriage. So that puts us at 53.
Why?
Because we did a morning show together for 10 years, which I would always say to people, like, you talk to your husband for 4 hours a day, 5 days a week. Nobody talks to their husband for 4 hours a day.
No.
So I think we get extra time.
Yeah.
We get to add on time. So
we got so many amazing messages from you all. And we thought we would just start sharing some of those. We're gonna ditch the rest of the published list and go with the non-published list that
I love this.
From our nesters. So Marjorie, you've got some. Let's just kind of ping pong, shall we?
Well, I wrote out. So I want to say this is a little bit like if anybody remembers Romper Room.
No.
So we got notes from Sarah, Janine, Barb, Susan, Sarah, Senya, Elisa, Heather, Lindsay, Kimberly, Julie, Laura, Laurie, Anne-Marie, Maria, Lynn, Deborah, Sarah H., Nicole, Roxanne, Up North Mom, Tara, Liz, Christy, Gina. And that was only from one source.
I know.
The messages were coming in. I mean, this is the thing about social channels. They were coming in from everywhere. And it was really, really fun. I just had the best time going through them this week. And then I have to give a special shout out to Maya, who left the kindest audio message in 2021 that neither one of us ever saw.
Oh, man.
So Maya, thank you.
She
was listening to episode 241. Mm. That's how long ago.
It's 100 episodes ago.
100 episodes ago, and compared our podcast to a warm blanket.
Oh, geez. Boy, that's always what I want. I don't ever want to be considered a wet blanket, but
no,
a warm blanket. I like that idea.
Blanket. So to the advice, I'm going to start with Anne-Marie. I thought this was really interesting. She said, what makes our marriage work? We came from similar backgrounds and have very aligned goals. So that's the headline, aligned goals.
Mm-hmm.
Financial goals, how we want to raise our kids, retirement goals. We both are really driven, which makes for a lot of common ground as well. I think that is having our own friends and interests, as well as a small allowance so that we're not on each other's butts about things like Botox or NFL football collector cards, things that people probably fight about. It's not for everyone, but we both have always worked full time, and I enjoy not having to pitch why I'm getting Botox, frankly, and I don't want to know about the collector cards.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think a lot of stuff came up about finances and what people spend money on. And I do think that it can be very divisive within a marriage. Just if you start foundationally, it can be very stressful if there isn't enough money mm-hmm. to cover your monthly bills, because that's just a stress that I never want to live again.
Right. I know.
And then beyond that, once you have some disposable income, if your goals aren't aligned of where that money's going to go,
mm-hmm.
that can be very stressful. So I like, that's not my system, but I like her system that they have like a fund that they can pull from, I guess, where they don't have to question where the money's going.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I was a real selling point for Jay when
yeah.
he was in the running to become my husband. And I was dating multiple people at the time that I was dating him, but whatever.
I forget
my younger
that.
Days. Oh yeah. It was great. but I remember really early on feeling like both of us, we came from similar backgrounds in terms of finances and in terms of just like the type of neighborhood we grew up in and the type of suburban, whatever. And we both, as much as we appreciated that upbringing and we loved a lot of things about it, we had very clear and aligned ideas about what we wanted our life to look like. Like I am not, you know, and this is nothing against the suburbs because I grew up in the suburbs. It's great, but I am not a suburb
right.
person.
Right.
I will either live out in the country on 10 acres or right. I will live right in the middle of the city. It's not like a right. middle ground deal for me. And so, and Jay is the same. And
that's
and
huge, actually.
That I think is really huge. And I know it seems like those two are real opposites, but it's just a matter of what's the idea of how you want to surround yourself? And that has just made setting up our life together a lot easier. And we have plenty of other things that we disagree on, but
right.
that one thing I think has been helpful.
Well, and I think for, in terms of what was really important for both Ian and myself was we knew that we were going to do that we were both going to work in media.
Mm-hmm.
And that does usually require a bit of jumping.
Yeah.
Moving. Especially in the day. I don't know so much now, but when I was coming up and when you were coming up,
yep.
Generally in television, you started in a smaller market and then you jumped to bigger markets. And the same was true. So, you know, for Ian and I, that had to be, we had to be on the same page. And the tricky part of that is when we lived in Nashville, I was headed to law school. I had gotten accepted to law school in Iowa at the University of Iowa. And then we moved to Nashville and I was still thinking, oh, I'll go to law school. I applied to Vanderbilt and that would have very much, and then I got pregnant at the same time. And so just the timing didn't work out,
yeah.
But that would have changed our life significantly in that alignment because you can't be a lawyer that's jumping from city to city.
Right. Right.
In media, it's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. But I think we talked about that early on, that was a life that we were going to pursue, that I was good with the fact that he was in radio, which defines how you live your life. Those are the big ones. But I think she makes a great point that being in agreement about retirement, how you're going to raise your kids,
yeah.
Religion, I mean, all those things, like you really got to talk about that before you get married.
I know,
it's
you
important.
Do. And, you know, I think you're right, though. There is this sort of thing of, I don't care what a person does, as long as they're passionate about it. You know, like, I don't care if he's this or he's right. that, or she's this or she's that. I think that's kind of a load of crap.
It is.
Because you do need to care about what that person does because it impacts you. And I believe that I learned that very early on because my father was a minister and my mother was a minister's wife.
Yeah.
And so very early on, I understood that in many careers, including the career that I grew up in that house and in the career that I have now, that there is a family role to play when it comes to that person's
huge
career.
Impact.
And so if you're going to say like, oh, I love this man. And it's really a big priority for me that he is home at 5 every night and around, like, what do I want my family dynamic to look like? But he's a surgeon who's on call all the time. And he's a surgeon who's obsessed with his job. Like, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's wonderful that you love that person, but you have to think about what your daily life is going to look like with the demands of what the other person has going on.
Right.
It's just the truth of the matter. And it goes way beyond finances. It goes to time. It goes to thinking about the type of people that your spouse surrounds themselves with, the type of events that you have to go to, what's expected of you if they have that career. And it's not to say that you can't make it work. But I think to say like, as long as that person loves what they do, then I love that is not realistic.
No, because if we go back to, and a lot of people mentioned partnership, and that was on the original list too, that marriage is a partnership, mm-hmm. that's what that means. That if your career, both of your careers will have a huge impact mm-hmm. on both of your lives. So you have to be a partner in that. I mean, you just do. I mean, when Ian and I first started out, he was doing morning radio. And I was producing a 10 o'clock newscast.
Uh-oh.
You couldn't be on more different schedules. It was really hard. In news, when you're producing, your adrenaline peak is at 10 o'clock at night when the show goes live.
Yep.
So then you have after show stuff. So I wasn't getting home till midnight. And then I'm still wide awake. And he's leaving the house at 4 o'clock in the morning. But he was super supportive because he knew that that's what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And in radio, you kind of want to be in the morning. So that's what he needed to do. But it was really a difficult way to start. And
yeah,
then,
that's
I mean,
a season.
And then, yeah, it's a season. And then the other season was when he decided he was going to go to seminary.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to say to him, like, I don't know what's in your head, but we need to talk about it. Because if you're going to become a priest, I can't be the priest's wife.
Right.
I can't be a pastor's wife. It's not a role I'll be good at. It's mm-hmm. not a role that I think is necessarily fair. It's not.
You're preaching to the choir on that one. And I'm the person who got recruited to sing in the choir.
Yeah.
My dad was the preacher.
Yeah. It takes the whole family. And so, but those conversations will not only happen when you first get married, people have career changes. They'll happen throughout your marriage. And I think
you're right.
You can't be sort of Pollyannish about that. You've got to really understand that it will impact you.
The finances are interesting. Christy DM'd us and said, I've had many conversations with my girlfriends about marriage, and the number one thing they argue most about is money. My husband and I have separate checking accounts to pay for the bills, which we split amongst each other. However, we have a joint savings account that we contribute to each pay period that covers household repairs, vacations, etc. The money I work for is mine. I don't have to justify what I buy and how I spend my money, nor does he. We do, though, discuss bigger purchases. Unlike my girlfriends, I have no guilt or need to hide Amazon boxes that show up on the doorstep or explain the $200 pair of jeans I have to have. She said, I know not everyone works full time, and I understand that one person in the household may make more than the other. So this isn't going to be for everyone. But hearing them talk about the money argument they all have was an eye opener to me. I have to say, this is one of the things that makes my marriage great and avoids those tough conversations. And, you know, we talk so much about this because, you know, Jay and I didn't get married until we were 33. And so we had full financial histories prior. I think it's really different when you get married in your early 20s. Or if you're going to make the decision that one person is going to not be working outside the home and not bringing in money. So those situations are different. I think I'm probably more in the Christie camp where we, Jay and I each have our own checking accounts and then we have a joint account and we kind of do the, well, a little bit of the opposite. We put, we each have a set amount that we put into the joint account every pay period that pays for all of the bills and pays for all of the other things.
That's
and
then, fascinating. Then who, the money that's left over is just.
And then the, and then we have certain amount that we put into savings and we have joint accounts and then some separate savings accounts. Like I have my own savings account, obviously like both have our own 401k and our own retirement. And it's not like we don't look at this as like a holistic family finances. But I don't want to obsess over like if he's going on a golf trip or he's buying new golf shoes or whatever, like that's his deal. And that's my deal.
Because everything else is covered. Everything else is covered.
And I don't like, and then we have conversations about the budget all the time. And I don't ever want to be in a situation where he's the only one who knows what's going on with the finances. And I also want to feel free to like have my own investment strategies with things that I might be interested in and stuff like that, that he, and then he can do things separately.
That's really interesting. We are completely different. And I think I would have been different had I gotten married older because I actually like knowing everything and I like doing it. so I would have always been involved no matter what, but we don't have anything separate. Everything is together, always has been. But that's also particular to us. And that's our, that's my comfort zone. And more importantly, actually it's my husband's because he doesn't really do any of it. And so he's just happy to not be a part of it.
It's sort of just like less complicated though. Like if you get married when you're 21, I mean, did you have? Like you each had a checking account, maybe?
Well, everything I had some money because I had saved money from when I was modeling when I was younger, I had saved all that. Mm-hmm. And so I promptly went and paid off my husband's school loans with that money. It wasn't a lot, but it's $4,000 or $5,000 in 1980, whatever.
That was really nice of you. I would not have done that.
I don't like
debt. I would have been like, you have to pay this off.
I don't like debt. And my parents paid for my college and his parents did not.
Yeah.
And so I just felt like that. I felt so, you know, I think what my parents did was generous. And so I just felt like I can do that and we can start our life debt free. I hate debt. I really do. I don't like to be in debt. I don't. So that felt good. And it would have felt weird to me. But, and I say this with no judgment, but this is a huge thing for couples. Mm-hmm. The way you talk about it, I really love that because I think it forces conversations about where you are. And I think the downside of my situation is we don't have any conversations, not many, because mm-hmm. it's just going. And I think probably we could have benefited from more conversations.
Yeah. I mean, so the downside of my method is that there is there's not always accountability. You know, I mean, we've actually talked about even being more transparent about just having like a more regular check-in on like, hey, what have you spent on this? What are we spending on this? Just so that we can make sure that we're tightening up a little bit.
That's the hard part. I mean, I pay all the bills. So I go through all the credit cards. I go through line by, I mean, I look at everything. Mm-hmm. So I know where the money's going. What is tricky is sometimes I'm not so much now, but when I was younger and you're in that scary building stage and you're like, we need to cover this. We've got tuition. We've got whatever.
Nanny and car. And I mean, all the so much, a lot of things, right?
It's not that way anymore. Cause I mean, we're just two people who don't have a lot of needs anymore. So it's mm-hmm. like, but my husband, shout out to Ellen Edmonds. My husband loves Allen Edmonds shoes. And so it's so funny because that will be, if he had any, and I don't even think it's excessive, but if he had any one thing that he spends money on, it's shoes, which is so funny because it's like we're the complete opposite. Like,
so funny.
But I see that all coming in. What is interesting, and I may be formed the way I'm formed, is because my parents had separate accounts.
Yeah.
Always. Because my mom worked always and my father worked always.
My parents have separate.
But what was so interesting is the way that they did it is my father covered housing and my mom covered education.
Yeah.
So my mom paid for all of our college. And I'm not sure that that was fair. Like, it was definitely not equal in that sense.
Not equitable.
But I don't know how you're equitable. My mother made more money than my father. So yeah. I don't know how that's equitable. I don't know how you make it equitable, but I'm grateful that she paid for school. But
boy, isn't that a great marriage secret? It's never going to be equal. The sooner you just realize that,
yeah,
the better.
That's actually,
you're not just
true.
Like listing. Okay. We've got a whole bunch more.
Okay,
let's
do you have
sure
one more? Do you want me to go? Well,
I do love these. Senya. Oh, we know Senya May, our acupuncturist,
yes, I love
our functional
that.
Medicine. Practitioner, she says, keep playing together. Both our sets of parents modeled this super well. My parents biked together and had regular movie nights, and his parents hiked all over the place. If all you have are bills and work and raising kids and household chores, where is the fun in your life? You have to have that fun together. She said, we've been married 25 years. We've biked everywhere from Minnesota to the Pacific Coast to the French Alps. And with our son, we bike as a family all over Minnesota and the US. The family that plays together stays together. And I do think that prioritizing fun is a really big deal. And it's particularly, and I know Senya has a young son, and so she's in that same phase of parenting that I am. It can be so formulaic and you feel like you're just surviving and you're just trying to get your head above water. And it's very easy in those moments to build up a lot of resentment against your partner because especially if you feel like that person's having more fun in life than you do. It's complicated, but I think she's right. We really try to prioritize some of these like date nights. I told you, you know, now we're doing Sunday night date nights. We kind of look at it in a different season of figuring out like what works and when can we get together. For a while, we didn't have any time and I was so tired that a date night didn't work that I would carve out like an hour after we'd get the kids to daycare to go have coffee together and have a breakfast. And I mean, I was fortunate with my work and his that we were able to do that. But that was sometimes the only time we were able to have a conversation and like remind each other that you really like hanging out together.
Right. Without anybody else around.
Yeah.
I think that's really, Ian used to say in our really busy times, he's like, you know, I don't want you to be my roommate.
Yeah.
I just don't want you to be like, you're here, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, great, whatever. And I think that I think it's important too. I love how you always use the word season. I think it's important to know too, that those times will happen.
Yeah.
They're going to happen. You can't prevent that from happening, especially if you have children, but it's important to recognize that it's happening and then pull back.
Yeah.
I mean, I think to stay in this state of happy, playful existence, it's going to ebb and flow, but you just have to get back to the place where you're prioritizing it. I think, at least that's what I found.
Yeah, I think so too. And getting creative about how you can do it, because I think, you know, it's the same thing with self-care that we have this idea that it's like, just go get a pedicure and everybody will be fine. Like go get a date night and everything will be fine. Well, that doesn't work for, if you're like exhausted and then you're resentful that you have to go. I mean, there was a time when I'm like, I can't freaking go out to dinner. I can barely like get out the door for work. I'm exhausted. I'm like awake four times a night. When am I going to go do it? All I'm thinking about is a date night is, please God, can I just get home and go to bed?
Right.
You know?
I remember that feeling.
I know. That like wasn't that long
my
ago
only
for me.
Priority was how quickly can I get in bed? I'm so tired.
Yes, I'm so tired. Yeah. And when you wake up in the morning and all you can think about is when do I get to go to sleep again? The two times, like the two seasons of my life that I felt that is when I worked mornings. And then when I had small, little, tiny babies.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, not to go too deep in that, but that was the hardest thing about doing a morning show for 10 years.
Oh, it's exhausting.
I didn't realize until I stopped doing the morning show that I had been in a state of perpetual exhaustion.
I know. And then we did a mid-morning show and then you were just so happy. You skipped around everywhere. You did.
Also because of you. You were
lovely.
We had
a great time. It was really fun.
And we take a quick pause in this conversation to thank our sponsor of Best to the Nest, which is Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. This is the skincare line that I've been using for about 3 years. I just got Marjorie hooked on it over the last couple of months, and it is just so good. This is what I consistently say about Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare, is that it supports your skin in doing what it already wants to do, which is adjust according to the climate that you're in, according to the daily weather. And that is exactly how it works. The cornerstone is a three-step system, but you rotate between a couple of different products. So you use a hydrating balancer, which is like a liquid moisturizer, a serum goes on top, and then you pat in the day cream that is needed for the weather. So right now in Minnesota, it is cold, my friends. And so we are using that polar day cream most days. Although I was using temperate up until like a couple weeks ago too. It's been, you know, kind of one of those funny winters. So you choose your day cream based on the day's weather, the hydrating balancer, and the serum. You switch out according to the season. So you just switch out a couple times a year. Once you get the hang of it, it's so easy breezy, and you will see a difference in your skin immediately. Use that code BEST for an extra 20% off with a 100% money back guarantee. Again, the code is BEST for 20% off. Go to pourmoiskincare.com. That's pourmoiskincare.com. Now back to the podcast.
So Nicole writes, this is interesting. She said, for part two of the long game, my husband and I will have been married 19 years in October. We both come from homes with divorced parents and made a commitment before we married that we would work to make our story different than that of our parents. Mm-hmm. I laughed when Elizabeth said this week that you have to make being apart harder than being together. Yes, that's that was good. That was very good. That was some truth. And I like the idea of talking about our story is going to be different. You know, the way that Nicole wrote that, it sounds so lovely to say that our story is going to be different, but making your story different than the story of your family of origin, trust me on this, is a lifelong work of work. It's just lifelong work to make yourself different than your family of origin. So I so admire that, Nicole. And I think that's actually great, great advice. And it does tie back to something I think Elizabeth said on the last podcast, is understanding your spouse's or your partner's family of origin is also really important even before you get married.
Yeah.
Because it will have an effect on your marriage. She goes on to say, what also works for us is to remind each other to choose wisely and treat kindly. Beautiful t-shirt. Sorry, I'm screwing this up. I also just found this video from the other day, and this really resonated with me. It was from Brené Brown. I thought this was interesting because then the next message I had was from Sarah, who then went on to explain the Brené Brown video.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you want to read that one?
That's the 50-50, right?
Yeah. You can read that one from Sarah.
I love this one. So that's the Brené Brown dismissing the idea that relationships should be 50-50 because they're not ever. This is Sarah's message. She said that it helps to qualify. So if you are operating at 20%, your partner can come up with the other 80 to cover you. Or when your partner is only at a 10, you can come up with the other 90 to cover them. The key is to communicate that. And if you're ever both not up to 100% or you can't cover the other, then you need to be kinder to each other, more patient, get more sleep, give each other a break, forgive easier. Sarah said, I had a stroke 8 months ago and my husband has consistently been covering an additional 80% for me while I've been recovering. I'm so grateful for him. And this advice has been so helpful. And I, you know, Brené Brown, I watched the video of her talking about this, and it is a really, for them, for her and her husband, I think her husband's name is Steve. They have it's a daily conversation. What do you, or when they come home, like, what are you at? I'm at 20, I'm at 20%. What are you? Oh, okay. I got the 80. And then immediately like that, I'm going to test this with Jay Reimers. I'm going to explain this to Jay Reimers. And then I'm going to test it because I think we struggle sometimes where I believe that he should be at 100 all the time because generally operating at a pretty high percentage.
Yeah.
And he consistently will say to me, and this is his complaint about being married to me. There's only one, nothing else. Complaints. But it is like, you have to allow me to feel how I feel. And I think sometimes like, I'm just like, well, get it together. Like
buck up.
I mean, I really do have a buck up mentality. I don't with our kids. I do with him. And
it's one of the things.
Yeah.
Not surprisingly, that I love most about you because it's just, you're so strong. And it's just, and it was why working with you was a joy. Cause it's like, just get on with it. Like, and I'm that way too. I don't know if I meet your buck up, but I'm pretty scrappy. It's like,
that's I loved you. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just so funny because we would come in ready to play every day on the show.
Right.
There was no, it was a very consistent line, but you are that way in life in general. And what I also love about you, and I think you are a little bit different than me in this way, it's why I like being around you, is you lean toward optimism.
Right.
And so that buck up attitude combined with the leaning toward optimism, that's a big standard to live with.
Feels like for someone living with me, it might get a little exhausting over time. And so I will concede that. And, you know, and then what happens is I think if I don't just allow him to like feel the feelings and kind of like ease into things, then he really like revolts, you know, because then it's like, oh my gosh, where if I would have just been like, all right, let him be. And not taking it like this whole personal affront of like, do not damage my day. You know, this is the struggle. It's very interesting.
It's
you know, the day-to-day interaction is I think interesting. And Molly Cat, you know, Molly Mogren Cat, who's been a guest on this podcast, who we adore, she sent me a DM and here's what she said. Here are my marriage tips. And of course, she's so organized. She wrote 1, 2, 3. Number one. Every time you enter your house or your partner comes home, try to greet them with the enthusiasm of a golden retriever. When you come home all negative, it shifts the energy for your whole family. That's 100% true.
I love that. And I've talked about this before. I have a Good Housekeeping book from 1964.
Yeah, I love it.
Which is all about like how you're supposed to run your house. And somewhere in that book, it talks about putting on red lipstick before your husband gets home. So I think Molly's is the updated version of that. And I like Molly's better.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing of greet your husband with a bit of joy.
Yeah. Like I'm excited to see you.
See you.
For everybody.
Yeah.
I mean,
I like that.
That's a nice thing to do for everyone in your family. Give your significant other a real kiss once a day.
What
she said, it seems so simple, but I more times than not, I find myself climbing into bed at the end of the night and thinking I didn't do that today. Better late than never.
You gotta define real kiss.
Well, like, Molly's probably doing a full out French makeout. I mean, don't you know Molly? Yeah. Get it, Molls. I think she means probably like a more intentional embrace now and a kiss. I will tell you one thing that has very much changed our home is that Jay and I decided that the first time that we like interact in the home outside of like when we're in the kitchen. So like, because I get up earlier, if I'm up and I'm, and you all know, like a lot of times we're in a sleep divorce. So like if he's sleeping and then we come down and then we're in the kitchen, we do, it's a real hug, like a real, like long, full hug.
Well,
you're
like
actually
that.
Joking the other day because I'm always like, will you scratch my back when we're hugging? And then I scratch his back and I was like, we should make a meme out of this. We should take video of us hugging and scratching each other's back and be like, this is the reason you get married. It's just
for this moment.
We're like, but it has made a big shift because it's just that moment of like physical connection of just a reminder of like, oh, this is this human being. Like this is this person that I love. That I'm connected to and not just someone who I'm like going about business with.
Yeah. For me, it's always and these are the reasons you get married. But for me, there's something about rubbing my forehead. I love having my forehead stroked. So like I'll lean on him when we're watching TV and I'll like,
like a cat.
Dog. Be like,
yeah, nudge
me.
In there.
Pet me.
That's cute. And then Molly said, know when it's actually important to take a stand on things and know when it's better to just STFU. Shut the bleep up.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah, no,
and then she
right
put a smiley face. I know. I think those are good too. And I do think that you learn that. That's sort of one of those things that sometimes it's just hard to learn without time. You know, I mean, I don't know if you can, if you're a really evolved person, maybe you can get that early on in a marriage, but it feels... Everything feels more intense. I think when you have sleep deprivation, everything feels more intense and you can just learn a lot more when to just be like, all right, whatever.
Right.
I say to Jay a lot, like you can think that. And if you think that, that's great. Like,
it took me a long time to learn that lesson, to choose wisely about what I had to take a stand on.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do think part of that was getting married so young. It was youth. But I mean, I think we all know people who are, could be 35 and are still emotionally immature. My chronological age just happened to match my emotional intelligence. I don't think I was very emotionally intelligent at 20. I don't.
Well, strength and independence is a really, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah,
it's your greatest strength and also your greatest weakness. Yeah. It's your greatest strength in terms of so many aspects of your life. And a lot of times in a marriage, it can be your greatest weakness because you just, your default is, I can do this on my own.
Yeah, I got this.
That's one of the things I'm the most proud of with myself. It's also the thing that makes being in a marriage the most difficult.
It's hard. And it goes back to, just real quickly, going back to Brené Brown. I watched the video as well. And I would encourage anybody, if that interests you, go, you can Google it and you'll find her. And I have to say, I reacted so negatively to it when I saw it.
Oh, really?
Which I had to like check myself. Like, why am I reacting to this? And partially it was that everyday communication of where are you? Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? It's like, oh God. And then I had to like sit with that for a moment and be like, why would that be a bad thing?
Yeah.
Why would that be a bad thing to actually have a communication about where your level, where you are? So I've sort of come around to it. I don't think I'll test it because I don't know that Ian would play on that. I don't know that he would. Mm. But, and we also don't have that many stressors now.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, once your kids leave home.
I know. It's what my parents keep saying.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like
they're like, empty nesting is the best part of life. I'm like, thanks guys, you're sweet. No, I get that.
But to you and testing it with Jay, I do like when after I had the first negative reaction, then I really started thinking about when we were having so many things going on all the time. Mm-hmm. There was stuff to do all the time, the stuff that had to be done all the time. Mm-hmm. That checking in with your partner on a day-to-day basis is probably a good thing. So I hope you do test it because I want to report
back. Yeah, I like that one. Okay. Heather said this, no games. If you feel it, say it. If you need it, ask for it. And if possible, no pants when you sleep.
I just lost my breath on that one.
That was really good advice. I do think that if you need it, ask for it is important. And I think it's important to ask that. I mean, this is a lot of therapy speak to, but you know, I talked about this a little bit when I was telling you that I was giving my sister golden marriage advice a few weeks ago, but, that finding a moment to have a conversation about what you need or what you need your home to look like, or how you need things to run in a moment where you're not just filled with rage and just pissed off about how it's going, having that conversation and then offering your partner some context about why you feel that way and what it's causing in your daily life to not have things go the way that you would like it, I think is so much more likely to reach a compromise versus just waiting for the boiling point. And
the boiling point will be a disaster.
Yeah.
It never works. It never works to come at anything with anger or rage. You're never going to get the outcome you want. You might get in the moment submissiveness. They may submit to what you're demanding, but it's not going to come without consequence down the line.
Yeah. Not Jay. He's not going to submit. He's no, he does.
We don't have submissive husbands. I would say that's not,
that's
not how I describe them. Tara wrote, I thought this was interesting. She said, hi, just listened to your latest podcast. Have you heard or read about the concept of fair play life? The woman who started it literally wrote down all household tasks and created a card game to play with your significant other. It's a fascinating concept. I've yet to try it, but she said she finds that fascinating. And then she just wrote, marriage is hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, lists of what's to be done. I would have to say I have no advice on this because I don't ever think we found our way on household stuff. I just don't think we ever did. I mean, and you know, part of that is for so many years when the kids were growing up, my husband was working 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. So it's like how much, if he's not doing something around the house, how much more do I really demand? Because it was complicated.
Right.
And he would try. I mean, but it was so complicated. And again, I go back to, we were both so tired. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of things just didn't get done. And I guess in some ways I would say, like, if you're in that situation and you're both really tired and you're both working really hard, just let go a lot of it. Let your house be a little messier than you would normally. Oh, if it's okay, it's if it's okay with
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
You know, and you that,
it makes my stress worse when it's a mess. And when it's, I mean, I just, when I come home and it's a mess, it's right. just very stressful. Right. I do think a lot of it is just acknowledgement of what the other person is doing. And I would say if I was just doing this podcast for many men out there, this is different for all types of relationships, but in a heterosexual marriage, that is, if you're similar to mine, there are a lot of household things that I do that Jay doesn't do. I mean, there's a ton
of things. He doesn't even see them probably. Right. But they need
it's
to
a
be
lot
done.
Of unseen labor yeah. and things yeah. that are getting done. Now, there are two kind of elements to this. Number one, I do feel like I've been a lot better about communicating what I need from him. So even we had a conversation, and to Jay's credit, I mean, he said to me, hey, the kids start golf. What do you think their golf attire situation is? And I was like, oh, they could use XYZ. And he was right. like, great. And then he went and got it all. He didn't yeah. have to ask me what size shoes they were, but whatever, that was fine. And then he went and got it all. And then he labeled the shoe boxes with their names and had them sitting out when they got home for their golf shoes.
This is good.
So that was really good. And then yeah. it was a big acknowledgement where I just was like, oh my gosh, that was so awesome that you took that and you just went and ran with it. Because he did say, like, well, do you want to pick them out? And I said, you know, this
no.
is your thing.
No,
this is
don't.
Your thing. And I, yeah. and you got to go get it. But some of that acknowledgement, I think it's asking for what you need. And then yeah. really the other person acknowledging what you do. Cause I can do a million things and I actually like I like cooking dinner. I like doing all those things. Right. It's just the acknowledgement that I'm doing it is all I really need.
Yeah. And as you say, cooking, I mean, I think that's sort of how it broke down in our house is Ian did all of the cooking.
I can't even imagine being married to that. I mean, honest to God, right. I cannot, the idea of walking into the house.
Yeah.
Because Jay will cook and he'll grill or he'll do whatever, but
right.
I always say, and I say to him lately, like, I'm like, this is really great that you're grilling, but I'm also making three side dishes. So I've made three quarters of this meal. And then it's like, oh my gosh, daddy made steak. Oh my gosh, you're so amazing, daddy. And then it's like, except there's a salad and right. like right. homemade freaking sourdough. And, you know.
yeah. Yeah. So. I mean, I will say, as I'm thinking so many times on this podcast, I actually have to go back and like, I have to really think about, and it's like when I was talking about, because for me, that was always great. And I did not take that for granted because it really was wonderful to not have to think about it, to not have to shop for it.
Yes.
To not have to, that's a huge, when you have kids, that's a huge thing off of what traditionally might fall to a woman.
Yeah.
Huge. For me, I was always thinking about like, and it's so weird because we were so sort of, we just did everything. Our roles were always switched. So for me, I was home maintenance. So I was always fixing, calling contractors,
yeah,
dealing with ice dams, you know, all of that. Yeah. Like, and then I really like a very clean house.
Yeah.
And Ian doesn't care. And so that's the hard part, I think, in any marriage. And I think if I were to go back and like had a questionnaire for my, you know, for my husband to be, it would be like, what do you consider messy? Like, what do you see as a mess?
And then you could provide visual aids.
Yeah.
So you would have images A, B, C, or D. Yeah. What is your comfort level? And you could show different photos
of mess. And I, interestingly, hates clutter, but doesn't see mess.
Mm.
Make that make sense.
It doesn't.
It doesn't.
No, doesn't make
but
sense.
It reminds me real quickly of a story that just Ben Affleck and Matt Damon were out doing a lot of press on their last movie.
Yeah.
It was Ben Affleck, Casey Affleck, and Matt all lived together in an apartment. And they said, and this so reminded me of Ian, and they said, you know, Matt would be like playing video games for days, or he'd be working. My husband doesn't play video games, or he'd be writing, or he'd be working. And that's my husband's thing. He'll be working. He'll be working on his computer. He'll be writing something, oblivious to the six dishes surrounding him or anything. And they said, so with Matt, that's the way Matt Damon is. And so yeah. Ben and Casey decided, well, we're just not going to clean up after him.
Yeah.
We're just tired of cleaning up after him. Because at some point, he'll break. And he will clean up his mess. And Ben, as he tells the story, is like, he never broke.
He never broke.
Casey and I broke before he broke. And I feel like when Ian and I were living separately, when he was getting his PhD, he would send me video of his apartment, like if he was in a particularly difficult time in the PhD. Oh my God. Oh my God, I could never, like, and he's like, I'm just too busy. And for me, like, I can't get to work unless the kitchen's picked up.
Right.
Like, I can't sit down to write unless things are in order. Mm-hmm. And he's the opposite. So I would have, that's a huge difference between us, which I've had to bridge, but I'm fine with that.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
I do love this. Laura says, whenever my brain is annoyed or frustrated with my husband, I try to remind myself that he is a good person. He's not making me crazy on purpose. He didn't mean to disregard or diminish my efforts. He is good and loving and hardworking, just like I am.
Okay.
We both want the best for our family. That reminder calms me down and puts me in a better place to have a conversation about how to fix the issue. I really think that's some great advice. And that is just called the benefit of the doubt. I mean, what it is it's just,
I love that.
The benefit of the doubt is very important. And then she said, oops, I didn't read the directions to send a DM. I just put all my business on Front Street.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Interesting question.
I love it.
Well, should we keep, we're not going to do a part three, but let's just say thank you to everybody that it was an incredible week for me. Obviously Elizabeth and I are very connected, but it goes back to what you said on the podcast last week. It's so nice to hear from everybody else. So we'll probably be doing more of this because
I really loved this kind of crowdsourcing conversation. And let me just say before we go that I do want to acknowledge a message that we got from Janine, who said, I wish I could help with this one, but alas, ... And then it looks like a friend of hers piped in and said, hey, you tried, can't help it. He didn't try. And I think that's important to acknowledge because, you know, I think we all go into marriage having this idea that we want it to last, right? That we want it to be the long, you know, we're in it for the long game. This was the theme of the episode that launched this conversation today. And at the same time, acknowledging that your life is your life and you certainly have the control to do all of these things, but the only person you have control of is you. And so if you are at a point where you are met with disinterest or disregard, or at its very worst abuse, there's no shame in saying goodbye to the long game because this is not the way that things are working out.
Or understanding if somebody says goodbye to the long game on your behalf and it's a surprise to you,
right?
Of knowing what you did in that marriage and that it may not be your failure.
Right.
It may not be at all. You may have been loving, kind, all of these great things, that it's your partner's failure, not yours. Mm-hmm. That just because the marriage failed, you don't have to take on 100% of that.
Right. Right. And then your status as a married person isn't a defining characteristic of who you are. You know, we talk about this all the time. I talk about it particularly with regard to career, that has been a real mantra of mine since the beginning of my career in television, which is that what I do is not who I am. Right. What I do is not who I am. And that extends into my marriage, that what I do and my role as a wife is not at the core of who I am. Because when you identify with something as who you are, if and when that is taken away from you, because at some point it will be, I mean, everything is impermanent in this world, right? The thought of losing who you are, to me is very terrifying. I want to stay grounded in who I am as I am an individual, child of God, human. That's it. And then It doesn't mean that I don't still feel grief for losing those things.
Right.
But attaching them to who you are can be really tricky.
But I think I love that. And I think that's actually a wonderful way to end this, because marriage, I think this whole idea of the long game, it's about how do you stay in a marriage, but more importantly, it's how can you stay successfully and happily in a marriage? And if those things aren't achievable within that bond, break it.
Yeah.
Because we deserve, I think it goes back to that idea of being, of knowing who you are first mm-hmm. in that, which is really important. And I don't say that break it cavalierly.
I know just you say, don't.
Because it's, as you can see from all of the advice we got, the long game is there's an ebb and flow to marriage. Sometimes we'll be happy, sometimes it won't be. But if you're bringing your best to it and you have good communication skills with your partner and he's bringing or she's bringing the best to it, that's the kind of marriage that I always wanted to be in. That over the course of it, over the 38 years when we've been married, on the main, we've been happier than not. I felt more respected than not. All of those things. On the main, it's in the positive column.
Yeah,
and I think that's all you can hope for. But to Barb and Janine, they're good friends of mine from Phoenix, and I miss you both so much. So if you're listening, I miss you guys. So, gosh, a lot in there.
I know, that was so good. I think we'll just end it on this note. If at all possible, sleep with no pants on.
Okay, just for everybody listening, I just laughed very loudly, and that is going to get squelched by Zoom. So I'll laugh. I'm laughing. Emoji, laughter, laughter, laughter. Oh my gosh.
If you are enjoying this podcast, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and give us a review at Apple Podcasts.
Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Best of the Nest. We are the podcast that brings you home.